UK Wine Show, show number 171. Burgundy with Pierre Boyeau. G'day, welcome to the UK Wine Show for the 28th of August 2009. My name's Chris Scott and we have another great show and continuing looking at Burgundy. This time we're talking with winemaker Pierre Boyeau from Domaine Lucien Boyeau. Pierre had some great wines on offer and I must admit I enjoyed tasting his delicious wines. That said, I am a more of a white Burgundy man than a red one, and Pierre produces mainly red wines, but they're still pretty yummy. We're going to be talking with Pierre about Burgundy, the difference between the regions he grows his grapes in, and some of the different ideas taking shape in Burgundy, such as wild fermentation versus inoculated yeast. It's quite a broad-ranging discussion, and hopefully you should find it pretty enlightening. In the spotlight, we're looking at clones, and the mystery region, which you guys have to try and work out what it is a quantitatively important wine region in Europe, producing wine from the Gamay grape. The climate is temperate and semi-continental, while the landscape in the north of the region is made up of rolling granite and schist hills and some limestone, while the south is flatter with richer soils, making for lighter wines for early drinking. I'm going to give you a lot more clues after the news with Jane.
Thanks, Chris. The still light wine market may be showing the first signs of recovery, with volumes up 2% after a period of stagnation, according to Nielsen figures. Value sales remain in growth, up 6% in the year to July 11th, 2009, to just over £5 billion, due to the increases in duty and exchange rate fluctuations which have forced up prices. Champagne continues to decline by 14% in volume and 9% by value, but sparkling wine has held up much better, with volumes down just 1% and value up 7%. Nielsen said the good weather in June and early July helped boost wine sales, with rosé pushing the market on.
The UK wine scene is holding up well, but some importers are suffering. HWCG, the importers of Montes from Chile and Blason de Bourgogne, have gone bankrupt, and PLB, another importing agency, has snapped up the assets this week. But the news story that caught my eye was that Brits were no longer on booze cruises to Calais, with numbers significantly down as Britons find the euro a bit high for cheap bargains. But if you're going to Calais, you might as well only spend very little, because you're only saving £1.61 on duty, particularly with the strong euro versus a pound. But if the spend on wine is getting lighter, it's the bottles that are making the big breakthrough this week. What's going on there, Jane?
Well, a lightweight wine bottle claimed to be the lightest screw cap bottle ever to be produced is being trialled by UK bottlers Kingsland and should hit UK supermarket shelves in January 2010, all being well. At 300 grams, it's 200 grams lighter than the average weight of a wine bottle in the UK. Nicola Jenkin of the Waste and Resources Action Programme, that's RAP, which launched the initiative, said the lighter bottles have been technically viable, but the wine community hadn't wanted to use them because they didn't look right. This new Bordeaux-shaped bottle is aimed at large volume brands bottling their wines in the UK, and according to RAP, more than 200 million litres of wine are shipped in bulk and bottled in the UK each year.
300 grams? That's a light bottle. Fantastic! We've actually had Kingsland on the show and Nicola Jenkins from RAP talking about lightweight bottles before, so do go back and have a look at those shows in the past. But it is one thing that supermarkets can achieve by importing wine in bulk from places such as Australia. And we all know after our chats on recycling earlier in the year how important these things are for improving our carbon footprint in the UK and reducing the carbon footprint of wine. But bulk wine importing from Australia are not considered Australia's future, and some companies are not happy with the change to more prestigious wine. What's going on there, Jane?
Wine company Australian Vintage, whose brands include McGuigan and Tempest 2, is pulling its funding for this year's UK generic marketing campaign by Wine Australia, claiming the plans no longer represent their commercial interests and are too focused on promoting regionality. Meanwhile, wine giant Foster's are backing the Wine Australia campaign, although marketing director Richard Trimby did say there needs to be more of a focus on brand Australia in order to protect Australia's number one position in the UK. Pernod Ricard said it's paid up its membership bill and fully backs Wine Australia. That's all from me this week, but don't forget to check out our website, 3050.co.uk, for all these stories in full.
Well, divisions are starting to appear in the once dominant brand Australia and its generic marketing strategies. In recent weeks, disquiet has been emerging with the Australian branding machine. Firstly, Australia Vintage, owners and makers of Tempest 2 and McGuigan, amongst others, refused to pay their marketing fees to Wine Australia, the UK's generic marketing body, claiming that the body no longer represents their commercial interests. The move is the first significant crack to show under the stress of repositioning Australia from sunshine in a bottle, the home of cheap but good value wines, to promoting regional identity with their Regional Heroes campaign. After years of drought that have kicked the wind out of many Australian producers along the Murray River, the engine room for Australia's value-orientated model, Australia is slowly accepting the possibility that to make money, they need to move up the price-quality scale. This is a difficult transition. There's chronic oversupply when there's water, due to perverse government incentives that have promoted too much planting. Added to this, a growing realisation that Murray, with its increasing saliency levels, is no manna from heaven that they once thought. A radical move to higher value wines that will raise the whole profile of Australian wine as sought. This will leave behind many of the wines that are paying the marketing bill. The strength of the Australian wine industry has always been the focus and investment of marketing. The collective understanding and the ability to work together for what is good for Australia is very hard to do, and it won't be surprising to see the repositioning of Australia opening up other craps as they transition to the future. Well, that was a bit of a rant, I suppose, but it's quite nice to recap on the UK's most important wine country. Another recap this week is our spotlight. We're going to be looking at clones, so here we go. Normally offspring, be it grapes or humans, have a natural variation in their genetic makeup. For example, a child is a mix of both parents, but although siblings share the same parents, they are genetically different, unless of course they're identical twins. Occasionally a child will come along that is so outstanding it could be an Einstein. Wouldn't it be great to have a large number of Einsteins in the population? But cloning humans, if this could be achieved, is illegal. However, with grapes, we can clone the best examples. Exceptional grapes may be flavoursome, particularly good at growing in wet or dry conditions, or possess traits worth preserving. To reproduce those traits, a cutting is taken and a vine is grown from the cutting. This is called a clone, and each clone will have an exact genetic match to the plant the cutting was taken from. Unlike human reproduction, where the offspring are usually genetically different, clones ensure that each vine is genetically identical. In grape growing, most vineyards are planted with clones. The best vines are cloned, that is copied, and grown again and again. For example, the Pinot Noir grape variety has a number of different clones. Some are suitable for making sparkling wines, while others are best for still red wines or suit different types of soils. When planting vineyards, it's just as important to decide on the type of clone to use as it is the grape variety. In the interview with Pierre, which is coming up very shortly, Pierre talks about using a number of different clones to get complexity within his vineyard. And we're going to talk about that after our next clue on the mystery wine region. So here goes. Almost all of our mystery wine region is red. A small amount of white wine is made, mainly from Chardonnay, and even smaller amount of rosé. But it is red wine that dominates. While half the wine goes under the basic appellation, it also produces Nouveau, the youthful wine made for immediate consumption released each November. It is this wine that regularly gets the press for being first for the vintage. In the past, Nouveau has generated races to get the first bottle back to the UK, but now it's mainly countries such as Japan that are into this marketing gimmick. Hopefully that should give it away. Nouveau is a pretty big clue for you guys, and I'm going to give you the answer after this week's interview, which is with Pierre Boyeau from Domaine Lucien Boyeau. We talked to him about being a quality producer in Burgundy. Hi, I'm here with Pierre at Gevrey Jean Bata at his winery. How are you, Pierre?
Ça va bien, merci beaucoup.
As you can tell, Pierre doesn't speak a lot of English. I understand he understands it all, just doesn't speak it. So we've got our old friend Olivier from Vinophile to help translate. So what we'll do is we'll just start off with a wee bit about where in Burgundy we are and where do your wines come from.
Alors, le domaine représente 7 hectares de vignes.
The domain is about 7 hectares and is shared between the Côte de Beaune and Côte de Nuit. In the Côte de Beaune, we got vineyards in Puligny, Volnay and Pommard with Premier Cru Associated. And in the Côte de Nuit, we got Gevrey-Chambertin. Gevrey-Chambertin premier cru, different premier cru. And Nuit Saint-Georges premier cru Les Pruliers, which is a very old vine, 95 years old vine.
We've just tasted quite a few of your wines. Thankfully, all the premier crus, and we've tasted a range of vintages as well from 06, 07, 08. Stylistically, they're all obviously Pinot Noir, and they all taste Pinot Noir-ish, Burgundy-ish, but they do taste differently. Do you want to just walk us through the Vounet, the Pommard, and the Gevrey in terms of the stylistic difference you'd expect?
Alors, effectivement, j'ai des vins qui sont...
Yes, we have tasted three different style of wines. And it really reflects the typicity of Burgundy, I would say. The first one were Volnay, premier cru, coming from the Côte de Beaune, with very floral, fruity notes, very soft, feminine and elegant wine. Compared to his neighbor, the Pommard, which is about half a mile from Volnay, but with a different soil, with more minerality in the soil, and producing more robust, stronger, more earthy wines, which needs to age much more compared to the Volnay. And finally, we had some Gevrey-Chambertin premier cru, Les Corbeaux, which were also very fruity, red cherry, red fruit, quite robust in terms of powerful, and quite heavy, but very... All of them are very respectful of their terroir and are really reflecting the typicity of each appellation.
Let's look at the Volnay versus the Pommard, because they're quite close to each other. They're a similar height, so they're, you know, geologically they're actually similar, except for the soils are the main driver. And when we spoke, you said that the winemaking was similar, but they did taste differently. What specifically is different between the two soils, between those two regions?
So in Pommard, we got a soil, red chalky, very deep soil, where the roots can go very deep, with lots of iron also. The wines produced when you got so deep soil are much more robust compared to Volnay, where the soil is white chalky, is lighter soil, producing so less strong wines. It's very close. It's even less than half a mile. And when you look at the Pommard Premier Cru, for example, the Pommard Premier Cru is touching the Volnay Premier Cru, but it's a few meters one from the other. But the style, the soil underground is different. So it's really the typicity and the best example of typicity of climate you can have in Burgundy.
A lot of grape varieties and wine regions where you have deep soils, you also normally have quite high vigor in the vines. The vines are quite vigorously growing, a lot of vegetative growth. Is that the same here?
You are absolutely right, saying that deep soil gives more vegetative vineyards. And the best example was in 2003 with the big heat wave we had in France everywhere. And in Volnay, the vineyards suffered a lot compared to Pommard, where everything went very well because of the deep soil, and the vineyards were still had humidity and was less suffering from dryness compared to other soil very close to Pommard.
Okay, it's interesting because chalk, you're on limestone in on the coat, and limestone is good because it lets water flow through it, but it also stores a lot of water as well. So wee bit surprising that the roots are getting into the limestone in Volnay easily. I would have thought they'd have good access to water compared to maybe the normal soils.
Yeah, you got chalk and limestone everywhere on the coast. And according to each village, the percentage between chalk and limestone can be different. And even inside a village, it can be different. So each plot will react differently. If you got more chalk, then it will be drier. If you got more limestone, it will keep the humidity and the water. And in Pommard, you got more limestone with deep soil. So the vineyard is suffering less compared to Volnay, where it's more chalky, more drier soil, and you got less water, so the vineyard is suffering more.
Okay. Do you use different root stocks and or different clones, depending on whether you're in Volnay or Pommard?
So in the domain, the typicity of the domain is to have very old vines. So, for example, the premier cru we have tasted were 63 years old. So it's very old Pinot Noir. It's not clone or whatever. It's old local selection Pinot Noir. And so year after year, some plants are dying. So he's replacing with new plants, which are not specific clone. He is trying to have as many different style of Pinot Noir as possible. So it's not only one clone or one number to replant. He's having many type of Pinot Noir to be replant.
Okay. What about rootstocks?
I'm using old style, the less vigorous vineyard we can have, because he's not looking for vigorous, producing lots of leaves, lots of things. So and also to diversify this old style plant to avoid to have only one, which could be sensitive to disease or whatever. He's trying to have different style, old style, not new style vineyards, and not vigorous.
Some regions that are on limestone have problems with iron deficiency. Chablis has the yellowing of the leaves because it can't get iron into the plant.
We have that iron deficiency, but it's very local. And if you look at the vineyards on the coast, you can see some very local plot having this deficiency, and they add some iron to compensate this lack of iron.
So it's not really a big problem.
But it's not a real big problem. It's very local.
This is something I have trouble getting my head around, is obviously Burgundy, mainly Pinot Noir, mainly Chardonnay, but what determines planting Pinot Noir in a site versus Chardonnay in a site?
Never forget that Burgundy got more than 1,000 years of knowledge, of experience. Mm-hmm. In the past, in Burgundy, you had also some Gamay, you had Melon de Bourgogne, you had different grapes. Mm-hmm. And the monks and also the growers have selected years after years, centuries after centuries, the best grape per place. And inside the same place, you could have also Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, as you can have in Chassagne-Morachet, for example. And after tasting and tasting year after year, you can see that the Chardonnay is better in this place than the Pinot Noir, or the Pinot Noir is better in this place than the Chardonnay. I would say it's more a quality, natural way of working, tasting, that as decides we will plant red in Pommard or we will plant white in Meursault. If you taste Meursault red, it's good, but the Meursault white, the Chardonnay is much better in the type of soil of Meursault. Is giving a better expression than a Pinot Noir planted in Meursault. That's the reality. The red Meursault are not bad, but they are not as good as a Chardonnay is.
But why?
Why? I would say because of the combination between soil, climate, and grape.
Do you think with the increased knowledge you have now about soils and relationships, do you think things would change? Obviously, it was trial and error, and the quality of the wines governed a lot of it. If you were to start again, would you land up in the same reds and whites in the same places? Or do you think that things may have been would be planted differently now.
The French Bourguignons do not want to use the new technology to try to reinvent Burgundy and its tradition and the knowledge. We got a great respect for our ancestor, for the monks who really created Burgundy. I think it's not the question in Burgundy.
Okay. You did mention earlier that a lot of producers are now using inoculated yeast versus wild fermented yeast. So some people are moving into that area. Why do you use wild yeast fermentation?
So there are two main reasons for not using inoculated yeast. The first one is because inoculated yeast very often conduct the fermentation very quickly. With natural yeast, it's very slow because they need time to demultiply themselves. And the second reason is the natural yeast are coming themselves from their own terroir, which means that yeast from Pommard is different, got different components than a yeast from Gevrey-Chambertin or from Volnay. During the fermentation, they will react differently according to their provenance, and they will underline specific terroir style or terroir aromas, and that explain why the wines are so different and why they are so respectful of their characteristic and their terroir.
That's interesting, because if the yeasts are an important component of the wine styles, it makes it more difficult to understand how the soil impacts the wine, because if the yeasts are different, that obviously changes the wines as well. It's not really a question there, is it? Okay. What is your favorite Burgundy? Is it white or red, and where is it from?
Yeah, outside, except the domain, of course.
your own wines.
Of course. I drank quite recently a fantastic Musigny from Comte de Vauguet 2001, which was an exceptional and unforgettable wine. So I mean, we got lots of Grand Cru, fantastic Grand Cru in the Côte de Nuit. And for the white Montrachet or Bâtard Montrachet, Grand Cru also, so the level is quite high at the top, but we got really very good wines.
How does the wines change from Grand Cru, Premier Cru, to Straight Village, Burgundy, in terms of, is it a weight factor? Does the wine get heavier, or is it a flavor character or a style difference? How do they change through the different quality levels?
So you are right in saying that it has been made according to organoleptic characteristic. Officially, it has been classified by the AOC law, dated, it started in 1947 in France. And but in general, the Grand Cru are at the top of the hill the best exposure, the best dryness of the soil. The Premier Cru are lower with slightly more humidity or less good exposure, etc. And the regional appellation are on the ground, at the lowest part of the ground. And the Grand Cru are the best exposure, better soil. But the classification has been done with many tastings, and many characteristics have been noticed. So in general, once again, in general, you can much more rely on a Grand Cru, and after Premier Cru, and after Village, and after Regional.
So on a great year, like 2005 was a good year throughout France, does that mean that the Village wines are almost as good as the Grand Cru, because you're removing that factor of the weather because it was such a good year? With Grand Cru, are you getting a better quality wine, or you're getting a more consistent wine?
You're, because of the location, you always got a better consistency. Even if the year is good, the Village will be closer to the Premier Cru and Grand Cru. But the bad year, the Grand Cru will not be at the level of the Village. They will still be at the upper range of all the other appellations.
So on a great year, I should drink Village Wine, and on a bad year, I should drink Grand Cru.
You can, it's your choice. it's your choice, but you will always have a difference between the Grand Cru and Village, the good year, the bad year. After, it's always a question of budget, of course. Mm-hmm. But the best way for you to decide if you have to buy Village, Premier Cru or Grand Cru, of course, when you can, is to come and taste the wine. Once again, I would say the wine is a pleasure. A pleasure you have to share, and you have to taste it to know if you are happy with it or not.
Okay.
Between the Premier Cru and Grand Cru, the difference is quite tight. So sometimes some Premier Cru are better than Grand Cru. So between those two, yes, you can hesitate or you can swap. But between Village and Grand Cru or Village and Premier Cru, no, the difference is still there.
Last question. When we were looking through earlier, I noticed there was a lot of half bottles. What's the reason for that?
So more and more the customers working with restaurants are asking for halves, especially in France, because of course you are in better shape after drinking only one half than after one bottle if you want to work in the afternoon. So more and more people are drinking halves, and the restaurants are driving this demand for Bourgogne Rouge, Gevrey Chambertin, Volnay, Pommard. But in the evening, it's only bottles of magnums.
Okay, I think we'll wrap it up there. Merci, thank you very much.
Merci.
Cheers, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Pierre. Next week, we've got one more interview in Burgundy, this time with a small innovative producer who's doing some unusual things with lees. But before we finish up, how did you get on with the mystery region? It is, of course, Beaujolais. The Nouveau bit should have given it away. The red wine region in Burgundy, of all places, although the Burgundians don't like to talk about it. Here are the clues again. Beaujolais is a quantitatively important wine region in the east-central France, due south of Mâcon and producing wines from the Gamay grape. For administrative purposes, this 34-mile stretch is often included in Burgundy, but Beaujolais' climate, topology, soils and grape varieties are quite distinct. The climate is temperate and semi-continental, while the landscape in the north of the region is made up of rolling granite and schist hills, with some limestone, while to the south is flatter and richer soils, making lighter wines for early drinking. About half of the wine region is sold under the basic Beaujolais appellation, this coming from the southern Basse Beaujolais and the flatter land immediately west of the north-south auto route. Of course, the region produces Beaujolais Nouveau, the youthful wine for immediate consumption, released each November. This can carry either the Beaujolais or Beaujolais Supérieur, which has a minimum of 10.5% alcohol, or the Beaujolais Village appellation. A small amount of white wine is made from Chardonnay and labelled Beaujolais Blanc and Beaujolais Village, and an even smaller amount of rosé. Right, that's pretty much it this week. The only thing left is our quote, which is a French proverb, which I quite liked. It goes along with our Burgundian theme with the interview, so here we go. Burgundy for kings, champagne for duchesses, claret for gentlemen. Don't know if it's a great quote, but until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Chris Scott and the news is read by Jane Scott. To listen to other shows, visit ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.